It's translated as the spiritual practitioner. But currently, we also have the word yogi. Yogi is a practitioner. We can also translate it as the yogi and the scientist holding hands together. Of course, in science, they have their purpose, and in Buddhism, we also have our purpose. But the purpose in Buddhism is very clear. It's to find methods and ways in order to alleviate our suffering. And it's a very practical. To find ways, methods, so that we can alleviate our suffering. And in science, it's just to find understanding. But there is not a purpose. And for both studies, they have something similar. They both have a yearning to understand, to find the truth. In Buddhism, we believe that when we're able to find the truth, then we will be able to alleviate our suffering. Our suffering will lessen. And because of that, in Buddhism, there is the yearning to find the truth with the purpose so that a person can have less suffering. But in science, they also have a yearning to find the truth. And that truth, if we are able to find it, we can apply it. And we can apply it to whatever it is that we may need to apply it to. And that is the difference between science and Buddhism. In June of next year, we will go and look deeply into the difference between Buddhism and science. After the Buddha attained enlightenment, he looked for five of his friends that he used to practice together with in order to tell and share with them that he has found the truth, he has found the way, and the truth has been able to liberate him. And he wanted to pass on the things that he was able to attain. And the Buddha, he learned about the Four Noble Truths, and in this Dharma talk, it talked about suffering. Suffering is the first noble truth. Dukkha, it's usually translated as ill being. We feel that we don't feel comfortable. We don't feel at peace, and that's due to dukkha, ill-being. And when we translate it into Sino-Vietnamese, it's suffering. And in the Chinese character, it means bitter. It's like the bitter melon. It's bitter, it means it's not pleasant. But still, people still like to eat the bitter melon, even though it's bitter. So we ask the question, why does the Buddha start his Dharma talk by speaking about suffering? Why does he start with suffering? When we pose that question, we find a few answers. The first answer is, if the Buddha started sharing about suffering, it's because the Buddha's teachings is very practical and it's very clear. In order to take care of the suffering and other afflictions, and Buddhism has to be practical. It cannot go into the world of abstract, speculation. For example, before I was born, was I already there? Was I there before? And when I die, will I be there? This world, is it limited or unlimited? And that is called Hilung, which means that it's not practical and you're not able to take care of your suffering. The sutra, some of the gathas, the next gathas that we will be learning, it relates to this. When we go into the study of science, we see that there is a tendency to ask questions that do not relate to the suffering of humans. And this is a topic for both of us, a dialogue that we can have together. Although we say that the Buddha started sharing about suffering, but in that Dharma talk, it did speak about sukha, which is happiness. Being able to stop suffering. Because if dukkha is the first noble truth, then the third is the ending of suffering, transforming our suffering. And that transformation of suffering brings us peace, happiness. And so that Dharma talk does not just only speak about suffering, but it also speaks about the opposite of suffering, which is happiness. Because those two, they go together. You cannot just have one. It's like the right and the left. They always go together. If you do not speak about happiness, then you're not able to understand about suffering. And if you don't speak about suffering, then you will not be able to understand happiness. We're able to understand happiness and suffering because we are able to see, we're able to understand happiness deeply, and we can see the reasons of why they're suffering. And both of them, they illuminate each other. And suffering and happiness, they inter-are with one another. Suffering and happiness, is not an objective. But it relates very much. It really much depends on our look, on how we see things in our mind. During the Li Dynasty, there was a venerable nun named Yung Yim. The venerable nun, she passed away, and she left back a very beautiful gatha. It starts like this. Wait. There's four more phrases, but it's the first four is San Lao Ben Du. It's birth and death are something that is very normal in daily life. Why do you need to find liberation from birth and death? The more you find liberation from birth and death, then the more you will suffer. If there is life, then there needs to be birth and death. And in that way, birth and death, sickness, old age, is something very normal. Why do you need to liberate yourself from those things? If you want to find, because you want to find liberation from those things, that's why you suffer more and you're more caught. It's like you're trying to climb up on a tall tree and you keep climbing and eventually you will fall. Suffering or not suffering, it just depends on how we look at things, on how our mind is. Happiness or not happiness, it all depends on how we see things, and that suffering, it's not something objective, it just all depends on how we see things. We live in that same environment. We benefit from that environment. But how come? There are people that are suffering and there are people that don't suffer. How come there are people that have happiness? Is it because of the environment or is it because of our mind? For example, in the morning when we do walking meditation together, and we go together with 300 or 400 people. And walking meditation is an opportunity for us to let go and to be in touch with nature, with ourselves, with each step and with each breath. And that opportunity is an opportunity for everyone equally. Everyone has the right to do walking meditation. Everyone has the fresh air. Everyone has good lungs. Everyone is able to receive the teachings of the Buddha and of Tai. But why? When we do walking meditation, there are people that are happy and there are people that aren't as happy. And there's even people that even run away from walking meditation. And that happiness and that suffering, does that depend on the environment, the atmosphere, or is that based on our mind, on how we see things? And in the sutras, suffering, we ask, what is suffering? Birth, death, old age, sickness. If we don't have any desires, then we won't suffer. If we don't love each other and we have to live with each other, then that is considered as suffering. But when we love each other and we have to be far away from each other, that's also suffering. That is what they say in this. Can you hear me? When we first marry each other, can you still hear me? Okay. Oh, when we first married, we were so happy with each other. Oh my God, and now you say, oh, I have 24 hours to live with this person. Oh, how am I going to survive? But it's that reality also, but it's just the way that we look at things. Is that person, you know, the result of our suffering or our happiness? Is it really that person? Or is it ourselves? But on the path of the Buddha, to speak about our suffering, it's not to speak about speculation, but everything, it's not the reality that everything is suffering, because suffering is based on happiness. It's like happiness is built upon suffering. It's like two sides to the euro, to the coin. They have the right and the left. And they have the face and the back. If you don't have the right, then you can't have the left. And because in that way, if we say that there's only suffering, then it's not right in accordance to the Buddha's teachings. But there are some practitioners that really want to prove that what the Buddha said is correct, that everything is suffering. But that is the opposite of what the Buddha has taught. If you don't have suffering, then you can't have happiness. You can't say that everything is suffering. And if you say everything is happy, that's also wrong. But if you say that happiness and suffering interbe with each other and they go together, then that is correct. And so in the teachings of the Four Noble Truths, there is suffering and there is also the ending of suffering. There is a path that brings us to suffering and there is a path that helps us bring us to happiness. In that path of going to happiness, there is wrong thinking, and on the path to happiness, there is right thinking. Suffering and happiness, it really just depends on our mind. In this tale of Q, this is when, after 25 years, she was able to find, to be reunited with her family. And that morning, she remembered that Gyu had played the sitar. And whenever you would hear it, you can feel the sorrow deep down in your guts. And the music, it's not a happy kind of music. It's very, you can hear the sorrow and the sadness. And when he heard her play that song, he could not stand it. And he had to put his head down, and it was like twisting his insides. And he had frowns on his face. In his insides, it would twist. And it was like very... It sounds quite good, but when you listen to it, you feel it's very bitter. Dreadful, yeah.
And so she said to him that she was born just like that, so she couldn't really do much about that. But after 15 years, she was wandering around. She once actually became a nun. That is a good thing about it. And then when she reunited with her family, she wanted to become a nun, to live as a life of a nun, but her family wanted her to come out to be a lay because she had so many things to do outside and repay their love. So she had to leave the temple to live her all the sisters in the path and came back to the family. And she actually was respecting her promise in the past that she came back. And she wanted to be just a friend with her old lover who she met again when she came back. And she wanted just to live as a lay, but be friend with him. And that night she told him so. She said that she was following her parents' wishes and her siblings' wishes that she came back, but she felt that she couldn't really be his lover anymore. She rather died. She couldn't act as a lover anymore. And so he, Kim Trong, said that he would respect her wishes. And so they both agreed that they would live as friends. And when she heard him saying that, she stood up and prostrated in front of him 3 times. And she said to him, "You are my real soulmate." And they actually transform the lover love to turn it into the love of the soul between the soulmates. And upon this opportunity, they recollected the memories in the past, and she played the music for him again. She didn't quite want to play, but she wanted to please him. So she took the sitar out. And her music, amazingly, actually is quite different now. Because after years of practicing, she actually had overcome her suffering. So that showed in her music, in her playing. And her music this time is warm and clear. There's no sense of suffering in there anymore. And so the music is beautiful for your ear, pleasing to your ear. And the incense perfuming the atmosphere. And so Thay is just reciting the paragraph describing about the music, the quality of the music, which is totally different, clear but very warm. And there's no suffering anymore in the music. And so he was so surprised at the same thing that she played in the past, but the spirit of the music is totally different. So the suffering or the freedom or the happiness in our mind is actually showing in there. Suffering. And so he's just kind of wondering that. He asked her, the suffering or the happiness, is that because of the mind? And so Tweekyu's mind was already liberated. She was no longer suffering. She knew how to keep her mindfulness trainings. She lived a very beautiful life. So she overcame her suffering.
Because when we are suffering,
we find the reasons for our suffering. And usually, we blame the environment. And when there is something that seems that it has created our suffering, then we call that evil. And when there is something that brings us happiness, then we call that as good, wholesome. And so in the history of people, there is suffering, natural disasters, earthquakes, and they suffer a lot from those natural disasters. And they say that the sky and the earth are not kind. And in the sutra, there is a phrase,
it actually said that the earth and the sky are not kind, and view human being just like a straw dog. And they said that why created human being, but also bringing a lot of natural disasters. So in that sense, they are actually, there's a lot of blaming and complaining the earth and the sky. Very unkind, looking at all beings like a straw dog without compassion. Feeling resentful toward the earth and the sky. And the earth and the sky have no love. But when we are happy, then we see the yellow flower, the violet bamboos, we see the clear sky, we say, oh, the earth and the sky are so nice, so kind. So let's suppose, let's just ask ourselves a question, the earth and the sky really are kind or unkind? For example, the sun and the earth, we call them our two great bodhisattvas. Are they kind or unkind? Are they nice or not nice? And in Christianity, there's the saint, a poet, François, something, I couldn't quite get the name. He said he's praising the sun a lot, saying that the sun is very nice and kind. When we are praising the earth, our mother earth is the mother of all beings, then we also say that our mother earth is very nice and kind, bringing life, bringing us a lot of happiness. So our perception about joy, suffering or happiness actually is forming the base for our view about kind or unkind, nice or not nice. If suffering and happiness actually are one pair, always going together, then unkind and kind is also a pair going together. If unhappiness and happiness are rooted from our own mind, then kind, unkind are also the same. The sky and the earth perhaps are either neither unkind or kind. It's all rooted from our mind as well. Looking more deeply into life, we can see that there's a tendency to look for balance. Balance in our environment, balance in our... If we have the balance in our environment, then life can continue more easily. When we upset the balance of the environment, then there would be a lot of suffering. And everything has been arranged on the basis of the cosmos. Anything that happening to the earth is not because of the earth itself, but under the influence of the whole cosmos. And so life on earth is not just life on earth, but it's also having the participation of everything else in the cosmos. And so our ozone layer and things like that on the earth is not just coming from the earth, it's coming from everything else, including human beings. In human being, we have the earth element. Our mother earth is here, but also we have other stars from the cosmos. And we have the particles here coming from the faraway stars. And so if there's a species on earth developing so much and so abandoned, then it will cause the unbalance on the earth. It will upset the balance of life. And of course, that will cause some reaction. And that species will be destroyed. And this is also truth with human being. Human being is developing so much. We now have 7 billion people, and the presence in abundance of human beings is somehow posing a lot of threat to the balance of life. If we keep continue like this, some internal conditions within the human species will emerge and will cause a lot of destruction. So it will come from inside of human being. Because the presence of human beings like this can cause a lot of unbalance, cause a lot of destruction toward the nature, and cause a lot of extinction of other species. And so re-establishing the balance is necessary. And the conditions that help to restore the balance, not necessarily coming from outside, but from coming from inside. Human beings, we are aware very clearly that the atomic bombs and the atomic stations are very dangerous, but we still keep going. And we are competing to with each other, we want to be safe and so on from one another. So we say, why do we have atomic bomb but not me, like Iran? I said, if you want to have atomic bombs, why do you stop me from having it? And we always have the fear, and we are running, we are competing. So the German Cecilia, I think she's the president of Germany, she decided to go out of using nuclear power, and that is a very awakening decision. And that is not on behalf of Buddhism, because awakening is awakening. It doesn't have to be from Buddhism. And there are enough German people who have the ability to be awakened. That's why she could be awakened as well. And what about France? Our president is not quite like that yet. When the whole society wants to go to that direction, then usually it's more possible. So everything is actually coming from our mind. So when we have a tsunami or an eruption of the volcano or a storm, it's not because the sky or the earth are unkind or cruel. Not because the earth and the sky seeing human beings as the straw dog, but it is the necessary thing that should happen to restore the balance of life. It is the need to restore the balance, because if that balance is gone, then it will cause a lot of chaos. So the internal and the external conditions would cooperate together to restore the balance for us. And if we can see it that way, we can go beyond the notion of kind and unkind of the earth and the sky. And the happiness and the suffering are depending so much on our mind, and the kind or unkind are also rooting very deeply from our own mind.
When the Buddha looked at suffering, he saw the reason, the cause that brought about suffering. And those causes have been displayed by the second noble truth, and when the Buddha looked at the end of suffering, then he saw that the cause, this helped him see the Eightfold Path. If the cause of happiness the Noble Eightfold Path, Bhaktarao is the Ignoble Path. And the right path, it starts with right thinking. Suffering or not suffering, it all depends on our mind. Did you hear? Suffering or not suffering, it depends on how you look at things very much. It's not because of the environment. Suffering is not an objective. If we are able to change the way we look at things, what we call suffering will transform and will change. Like the Venerable Nun said, there's no more suffering with birth, death, old age, sickness. You can easily be liberated from those. When you look at a leaf, it brings spring. Or in the summer, or when it becomes yellow in the autumn, the leaf, it also goes through birth and death, but it doesn't suffer. During the time that it's at the tree, it does everything possible in order to nurture the tree. And after it's finished, it falls down to the earth, then it makes the earth into having good compost for the earth. But why? Why does it need to suffer? And why do we suffer? And we say birth and death is suffering. And sometimes in the sutra, suffering is when there's the cycle of birth and death, old age and sickness. But the Venerable Nun said that those things are very normal. Why do we need to suffer? So the truth is the Venerable Nun did not suffer. And suffering or not suffering, it all depends on our mind. And because of that, the Eightfold Path, it starts with right thinking. And when we have right thinking about suffering and happiness, then we will be able to have right thinking about good and evil, kind and unkind, and other pairs like birth and death, self and non-self. And when we research and look deeply into good and evil, self and non-self, and in Buddhism, we don't go into an abstract world. And the reason of why we study is in order to be able to alleviate, to bring an end to suffering. We usually think that ending suffering is to change the environment. In society, there are poor people, there are people that are hungry. Injustice, social injustice. And now if we want to end suffering, we need to change society. We shouldn't have social injustice, we shouldn't have violence. And we think that suffering is, there's a cause, an outer cause. But in reality, there are also reasons that come from the inside. If we are suffering, if we have pressure, then we won't have the capacity to do anything in order to change the environment, to change society. It's only when we are able to have peace, we are comfortable. We have freedom. Then we are able to do something to change the environment. But if we don't have that, if we do not have peace, then we're not able to do that. And so in that way, the social activists, if you don't know how to practice, and when you make an act to change society, you can cause the society to be more chaotic because they don't have peace. And if they want to offer peace to society, then they need to have that. And in Buddhism, they see that very clearly. We have to have peace inside of ourselves first. We should not have hatred or resentment towards the earth. And when we are able to have that peace inside of us, then we are able to offer something. And we need to change the way we look at things. That's most important. It's not actually going out there into the environment and doing something. This is a revolution. And it starts from inside of us on how we see things. And it's not about the wish or having the desire to change the outer environment. It all depends on our mind, on how we see things. Wrong view becomes right view. And that is the revolution of Buddhism. When we say that in life there is only suffering, then that is wrong view, wrong thinking. And if we say that there is a world that there where there is only happiness, that is also wrong thinking. Right thinking and wrong thinking, they go together, and it all depends on our mind. And we need to have, first of all, right thinking and right view. There are people in us, they feel that they don't feel comfortable in the environment that they are living in the relationships that they have with their family. With their partner, with their father, mother, wife, husband, brothers and sisters, and they want to get away from that. And they think that I cannot continue to live. I need to have a divorce. I need a lawyer. And we believe that our suffering, it's just because of the outer conditions. And we cannot see that we suffer and the other person suffer. It also depends on how we see things, on our mind. Maybe we don't have right thinking yet, right view yet. And when we have right view, then we can see that we don't need to change the outer conditions. If we look deeply, we will see that the other person is also suffering, and we are not the only one suffering. And just that in itself can already change. When we are suffering, we just continue to blame the other person, or we blame the environment. And that is wrong view, wrong thinking. Our suffering depends very much on how we see things and how we think. So if we are able to take one step and we see that I am not the only one suffering and the other person is suffering, because if we suffer, how can the other person possibly be happy? And when we are able to see that the other person is suffering, then there is already a transformation and we don't punish the other person. We don't complain, or we take things against them, or have resentment towards them. And so the way we look at things, how our things are in our mind, it's very important. In Buddhism, they say that just sit still. Don't budge. Just sit still and reflect. Look back. If you don't, if you continue to make movements and try to change the environment, then once you go back into that environment, you will just continue to suffer. For example, if you marry another person. But if the way we look at things is still the same, that suffering will arise again. Because we don't know that the cause of the suffering, it lies in the way that we see things. It lies in our mind very much. So it's almost the end of the year. We have to look back. if we have any sufferings, we shouldn't quickly say that, oh, it's because of the environment, that we need to look very closely and very deeply, and we need to see the responsibility of our mind, and we need to be able to be free from wrong view. And our liberation, our awakening will help liberate us, and it will benefit the other person right away, and once we are no longer suffering, then the other person will also not suffer. And if you're able to help me, then I'm also helping myself. And it's very clear. And now we will learn number 26. Got the number 26. Number 26, because of the difference between previous and present life, because the previous and the present is not the same. It's not the same, and we still think that it's the same. Like the stream, the river of today, we think that it's the same as yesterday. Yeah. But there are things that we can see the difference very clearly. When we look at an album, the family album, we can see a picture of us when we were 5 years old. A little boy that's just 5 years old. Or a girl, a little girl. And if we look at ourselves now, we can see clearly there's a difference, but we still have that same name. But it's very different. We are very different from when we were 5 years old. Looking at the form, how we thought, our feelings, our perceptions, our consciousness, everything has changed because of the difference. There is a difference between the previous and the present. And the second reason is because the cause is found in the effect. They go together. They embrace each other. Cause and effect embrace each other. Because cause and effect, they are not two separate entities. We can say that you are right now is the effect, and you as 5 years old is the cause. But the cause and effect, they are in each other. Nyip means it embraces. It's like when we say that does the chicken come first or does the egg come first? Is the chicken the cause and the egg the effect? And, or do we say that the opposite? And we think that the cause and the effect are two different things. But honestly, the truth, the cause and effect, they are in each other. And if you say that, if you ask, does the chicken come first or the egg come first, then that, it's a very ignorant question. Because they are not separate from each other. They are two sides of one reality. Cause and effect, they embrace each other. If you take the cause out of the effect, then it's not possible. And the same for father and son. If you take the father out of the son or the son out of the father, it's not possible. The father is also the cause and he is also the effect, and they embrace each other. And because of those two differences, previous and the present life and the cause and effect are found in each other, we do not say that the one who acts and the one who enjoys the fruit of the action are different from each other. Oh, you said something that maybe was not very kind, and you are the actor, the cause, and the effect is that you received a phone call. The person yesterday that said that was not very nice, is it one person or two person? Because in 24 hours, that person has changed a lot. It's like the fire. The person that is causing and the person that is being affected by it, there is not a difference. This is a different pair. Sameness and otherness. So, when we say the person who acts and the one who is enjoying or the cause, the effect of it, that it's a similar pair. The actor and the person receiving the act. There cannot be the one who acts and the one who is receiving the act. There is not a difference. If there is suffering, there needs to be happiness. Those are pairs that go together. And the first pair that the Buddha put out is suffering and happiness. And then it comes to good and evil. And then it comes to right and wrong. There are many pairs. And so the actor and the receiver they are not different from each other. And so you can see that this is a sharing about the middle way, that you are not caught in one or the other. You have been able to liberate yourself from happiness, suffering, self and non-self, birth and death, actor and the receiver. Going to number 27, because the process of cause and effect, is uninterrupted. Because the process of cause and effect is uninterrupted, the process of action is due to completion. When we see the word go, then we understand that it's the reason. Because the reason of cause and effect is uninterrupted. That is why there is the harmony here. It means it comes together. The conditions, they come together. they interbe with each other and manifest. And this is the coming together of cause and effect. Because the process of cause and effect is uninterrupted, the process of action is due to completion. In science, they say that material is the energy, and energy is one. Material and energy are one. Material, we see it like that, but we have to practice to see that material is one type of energy. And in science, they have sorry, we're having trouble hearing. There's force. The force field. There is those force fields. We can call them gravity or electromagnetism. And you can call any of those. And when you look deeply, you can see that this is made from the force fields, and the ultimate reality is the fields of forces. And when we look at a cloud, we can see that the cloud is actually rain. Because the cause of the cloud is rain. And that's a force field. And it's not something, and it's not something that is still. And because of that, when the conditions come together to create something, that is actually the creator. In science, they are able to see that matter and force are the same thing. And we need to practice to see that matter is like force, and force is matter. These two processes contain their own cause and also the object of the action. So the cause, it embraces the object of the action. The action and the object are one. In the past, after the first time Tai visited the British Museum, Tai came home and they made a poem. Tai wrote a poem.
In British Museum, I saw a body which became fossil few thousand years ago. And when I looked at it, I still saw the hair, all the details, like that person is lying on the side. Perhaps the grave was in hot sand, so the body was preserved. And that one time I went in there, I went with the two little children, the two sisters. The bigger one was only 5 years old, and I was holding her hand, and I saw the fossil of the human body. I was so concentrating and I forgot the little child next to me. I forgot that I was holding hand of the little child. And that child was going through a huge shock to see that. And she looked up and she asked me, "Will it happen to me?" And I came back. And I answered naturally. I said, no, no, it won't happen to you. Because the little child wouldn't be able to accept another answer. Maybe she will hear another answer when she grew up. But at that point in time, she couldn't accept any other answer. So that's how I answered her. And the next day in Paris, in the middle of the night, I woke up and I used my nail to press onto the skin of my feet, my foot, to see if I was still alive or become a fossil already. And then I started doing some walking meditation, and I brought a poem. The white cloud is the white cloud is floating and making a flower blooming, and the cloud and the flowers are just one another. The cloud is floating, a white cloud floating, and to make the flower blooming. And the cloud is just the floating, and the flower is just the blooming. So because there is no cloud, there would be no floating. If there's no flower, there would be no blooming. So the flowers are blooming. No cloud, no floating. No flowers, no blooming. So you cannot separate two reality. You cannot separate the cloud and the floating. And you cannot separate the flower and the blooming. So back then I already saw that. So the matters are the forces and vice versa. And so we are our actions. Like Zhang Fon Sap said, "Lom," you know, French, sorry, I can't. Men are the sums of your acts. So the definition of human being, what is it? You can't define human being as form, feelings, and so on. But you only can define human being as the actions, their thinking, and their speech. So when you look at something, some kind of materials, you don't think it's just kind of lifeless because it is lifeable. Although the matter seems to be very still and nothing moving, no life in there, but actually is full of life. And it's all actually is relating as the force field of forces. So when the cause and effects comes together, embrace one another like that, and manifest into matters. Manifest into the objects of one reality, and bring effects to matters. For example, when the rain is falling, it will bring some certain effects, and that is called, in turn, there is another effect on matters. And when the flowers are blooming, it also affects something. Number 28, when the cause is the delight in the proliferation of ideas, then there is action that is wholesome or unwholesome. That word means just argumentative, means just some obstructing perceptions, which the scientists or even the or practitioners tend to get lost into. The practitioner has to cultivate the idea that whatever they are doing, it should bring the effect of relieving suffering. So when they are researching and exploring that, we should not lose that foundation. If you want to find out something like, before my mom gave birth to me, did I exist or not? And so if we look into those things, there are two possibilities. It can bring us some liberation, but also it can bring us to something we can get caught in. So we always are trying to look for something like, before my grandma was born, where was I? Things like that. When the Buddha became enlightened under the Bodhi tree, where were we? But now we are sitting here. So, where were we? Which kind of form were we in? And when this body is disintegrated, then what are we going to become? We are going to be a bird or a snake or a deer. We exist or we don't exist. We beautiful or ugly. All those questions actually falling into the category of argumentative and so on. And so we know that if we go on the right way, the effect would be bringing us out of suffering. So the next sentence, the next clause. And so the actions, those actions that we do, they are pure or not pure. Wholesome or unwholesome. Wholesome karma or unwholesome karma. When those seeds, when those seeds are ripening, then they will bring the effect, bring the results that we like or we dislike. Or in the translation it says, come desired or undesired fruit. The Venerable Nagarjuna, he was specialized in emptiness. He specialized in Tantong, and I think Thaisi is going to explain later what it means. He was talking about the wisdom of emptiness. And when Venerable Asanga came out, he followed another tradition and he developed into the Dharma of the forms. Phabdung, on the one hand, is talking about the there you go. One is a numeral effect, and the other one I just couldn't get. We miss Sister Chung Kong. So on the one side, he specializes in emptiness, and that is the base of everything. And if we are not careful, we will have the impression that everything is in a void. And so this method is helping us to take away the notions, to clear away the notions of those pairs, existing or non-existing, being or non-being, coming or going, coming, going. And helping us to take all the rail on the train line so that the train is not going anymore. So that's the metaphor. So his method is helping us to clear up our perceptions, get caught in those pairs, opposite pairs. So it's help us to get out of dualism and helping us to see that the perceptions we have in our mind are not able to carry the reality. We have to be able to get beyond the perceptions, to let go of the perceptions. Just like when we go down to the river and we get some water, if we bring down a container with different shapes, depending on the shapes or the size of the container, then we can get the water into a square container or cylinder container. Because the water can be round or square or something like that. It depends on the container. So in our head, we have containers like that too. And that is our perceptions. We do have those pairs in our mind. Being, non-being, existing, non-existing, going, coming, and go on. And so if we get out of those boxes, we can't really catch the reality. And so the reality actually is not round, but we put in our round box. The reality is not square, but we put it in a square box. So the waves in quantum physics, you have electrons or the waves, and also the boxes that the scientists put duality in. So they will need to let go of that duality. They will need to let go of that perception. If they are still hanging on into those boxes, then they wouldn't be able to get in touch with the reality. So that is the method of Thai Long Tho, which is the first one that Thai mentioned on the right hand side column. But there are many people who wouldn't be able to follow this method, just like contemporary science. We will need to have some great figures to be able to break through these things. So, the Thai Vô Trước, which is the Venerable Asanga, he said that, okay, although everything is emptiness, but the form is there. On the historical dimension, the forms are there. So the other one is noumena, and this one is phenomena. So therefore, it came out to Alaya Vijana. And now we come to 29, number 29. The seat there. It's a tendency. It's relatively compared to something in science, it's force of energy. For example, the grilling your anger is affecting other people, and when your anger is not manifesting, it's staying in the form of a seed, and you do have that seed of anger in your store of consciousness, and so you cannot say it's not there, because it's there. Because if somebody comes along and says something, then you will get angry, and that would prove that yes, you do have that seed of anger in you. So there's this tendency to be angry. You do have the love in you, you do have compassion in you, you have the seed of compassion. When you listen to somebody's suffering, you want to listen to the suffering from that person, and that shows that you do have the seed of compassion, and that is a form of energy, and that energy is staying in a form of a seed. All of us have all kind of seeds in us. And those seeds have been transmitted from our ancestors to us. Wholesome seeds and unwholesome seeds. The seeds of suffering, the seed of happiness. And those seeds are not going to fall out. Just like our knowledge, whatever we learn, it's not going to fall out. Why? Because we do have the Alaya, which is the store consciousness. And it's storing all those. Just like a hard drive in our computer. It's storing all information. And it's storing in the form of seeds that we cannot see. But when we open up, it will, like in the computer, we cannot see. But when we open the computer, it will manifest on the screen. So, So when in us, when it's staying in the form of seed, we can't see. But when it's manifesting, then we can see. So when it's on the screen, we can see the manifestation. But when it's in the hard drive, we cannot see because it's there in the form of seeds. So in each of us, we do have that store of consciousness, our alaya, and storing all the seeds regardless of wholesome or unwholesome. And the alaya or store consciousness has a few functions. The first one is to store all the seeds, making sure that it's not any is falling outside. Just like in a museum, making sure that everything precious in the museum are staying inside. So that's the first function of alaya. The second is it will receive new information. So that it can sustain. Receiving and sustaining. Receiving new information in every second, every minute. When we listen to a Dhamma talk, our alaya is receiving and storing. And this afternoon we still remember. So our alaya is receiving, keeping, and learning. It is not our mind, our consciousness that is learning, but our alaya is keeping and learning. In computing science, we say it's processing. So our alaya is processing things down there underneath. And it's dealing, arranging all the data. And when we need to use it, we can come in and look for that information. So in the hard drive, everything is still. But in our alaya, it's very, very livable. Living, and all the seeds are on the way of ripening, and it's called thok. Thok is ripening. When it's ripening, it's different. Like the orange, when it was just coming out from the bud, it's like a button, a green button. But when it's ripening, then the orange would look different. So our ripening karma is also different. So a thought or any seed in us is ripening every moment. And the actor, the person who is acting will be the receiver as well. So the person who create the karma will be the person who received the karma. And so all the time our alaya is constantly changing every minute, every second. So all the seeds in our alaya actually make up the alaya itself. And it's got another name in Sanskrit, which Thay is writing on the board. Bija is the seed. And so, Nhất Thiết Chủng is another name of Alaya, and it means the totality of the seeds. So Alaya is the ability to store and slowly ripening. And so the second function is the totality of the seeds. And so when the seeds are ripening, are really ripened, it will bring the fruits to us. And those fruits can be pleasant or unpleasant. And so when and so we base on those things, we will have a view, the view of self. So, in other words, relying on the ripening of seeds, the view of self arises. The seed of wrong perception will lead us to the view of seeing an actor staying outside our five skandhas, controlling our five skandhas. And when the five skandhas are no longer exist, then the self no longer exist either. And that is a wrong view. So, because we have the wrong view, that's why our perception about ourselves will arise. At that point, there is a recognition of an inner knower, which is formless and invisible. So Thay is just reading the whole thing 29 again, relying on the ripening of seeds, the view of self arises. At that point, there is a recognition of an inner knower, which is formless and invisible. And so he's just reading it again.
The next Dharma talk will be in English and it will be on Saturday. Is that correct? And that will be the Dharma talk for Christmas. And the topic is God can be a person. At what time will the talk begin? At 3 o'clock. Oh, at that time, everyone will be so sleepy.